know where we are.
We're on page 29A.
29A. I must be a blot off. Okay.
Okay. So I have a feeling that there are people who aren't aware of the right time. So we'll start off a little slow. Let's just review what we're talking about here. Still going to see if I can refocus here because it's been a couple of days. Yeah, so there was a Gemara after that Mishnah that talked about Yai Nesach. Asher's B'kol Shehu. Remember, we said that Avodah Zarah, Yai, in Asher's matter what, even a Mashu. Chizkiya said, Chayish Shemazogom in Ha'isam in Ha'heter, that if you had a cup that you had, it was Mazgo, so you had water added to the wine. And then you have wine of Isser and you have wine of Heter. So if the Isser comes out at the end, in other words, if the Isser fell last Isser, then it was Osser. If the Heter fell into this last, then it's Mutter. Because we go Basser the last. In other words, if the wine became Osser through the Nefila of the last piece, then that would Osser the wine, and then it would become Osser. Rav Shmuel said, Rav Elazar,
he said that. You say the two wines don't mix.
Yeah, so the Gemara, not really. The Gemara says that, the Gemara tries to say that's Rav Elazar, because Rav Elazar said in the Mishnah we go after the Achron. Again, the Mishnah said, let's go over the Mishnah again. Good point. We should have done that before. So it says if you have a sourdough of Chulin and Truma, they both fall in together. Neither one has enough. So if they come together and they're mitzdarif and they become, and it makes the chumrin. So Rabbi Elazar says you go after the last one. So if the last one was a truma, so it's truma. If the last one is chulin, it's chulin. Chumrin say no. It doesn't make a difference whether it's a combination. It's never going to aser because that's the din of zevazeh goyrim. That we say is mutter, that's the stam din, that's the way we pass it. Zevazeh garim is mutter, and since you have not enough in the truma to aser, not enough in the non-truma, so it's zevazeh garim, okay? So now, the Gemara is going that this...
What do you need a phrase of zevazeh garim when you don't have enough to aser? There's not enough to aser here.
There's not enough to make the whole thing. But, so, I mean, if you hold Zevazeh Garim as Osir, then that's not going to be a Heter.
Zevazeh Garim means that the two are Mitztarif.
Zevazeh Garim Osir means they are Mitztarif. Zevazeh Garim Heter means they're not Mitztarif. Right. So that's the Machlokas. Okay, Rabbi Elazar says, but it's a little different, though, because Rabbi Elazar says Achron Anivah, so he uses the last one. So it wouldn't matter, right, if it's the first one, it wouldn't be Usser, so it can't just be Zevazeh Garim Usser, it's got to be more than that, right? You want to go backwards?
No, because I'm saying that, right, if the two together, the shear, it still depends on the order that it got there, according to where it was.
Seven. The reason for this, let's see, on 28b1, it says the reason for, so 7, it says the reason for this, when two similar substances join together, the character of the combined substances is determined by the latter one. If the truma sourdough fell into the dough after the chulin sourdough, the character of the combined sourdough is deemed to be that of the latter one, the truma. Well, why do you use the latter? Why do you use the latter one? I mean, I don't know, it doesn't explain it. Yeah. Then we have the thing with the cups, right? So he said, Chizkiya said it depends on which fell last, right? And then we had 17. Not 17. 18. So we said it's Rav Elazar, right? Rav Elazar goes after the two similar substances. You go after the last. If the truma sourdough fell into the dough last, then that's what determines it, blah, 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 blah. In the same vein, Chizkiya rules, character of the wine deemed by that of the latter wine that fell in. Okay? So, where the permitted wine was in a cup with permitted water, and then the Nesach wine fell in, the character of the wine in the mixture is deemed to be that of the latter Nesach wine. since the sum total of Nesach wine in the mixture imparts its flavor into the water, it is not nullified by the water. Where, however, the permitted wine fell in last, the character of the wine in the mixture is deemed to be that of permitted wine, and therefore the water in the mixture can nullify the actual Nesach wine. That's the idea here. Okay. And then Rabbi Yirmiyah says, Chomer hu b'yayin Nesach. He disagrees. He says, no, that this has nothing to do with Rabbi Elazar necessarily, because Rabbi Elazar is talking about Truma, and this is talking about Yayin Nesach. And the Yayin Nesach has a certain Chomer. In other words, even Chizkiyah could agree with the Chachamim, but it could be he holds that by Yayin Nesach you have to be machmir. Okay, this is a little bit of a review, because we're all real rusty. Then Rabbi Yossi had a question. Rabbi Yossi boy, that's really the best place to start. Imchaymahu b'yayin nesach, oh no, I'm sorry, it's not the right place. This is his objection to this. So he objects to this idea of learning Chizkiyah this way, because he says if it's only because of a chaymer, of yayin nesach, then what difference should it make whether it fell b'sof or b'tchila? That's his point. So therefore he agrees with that. Okay, now we begin. Choptas of Yasa, the shame of Yechana. Kois shemezogai be'isr umei heter. Okay? Cup of water was blended with both forbidden Nesach Yayin and permitted wine. Adroas ha'heter kamisha eno. Ignore the mutter wine. Oso ha'isr, and then the forbidden wine, imyesh b'nois and tam aser. If it can impart flavor into the water, it's aser. And lav, it's mutter. So if you have, let's say, the shir is shishim, let's use a stam shir. So if you have 60 snegdo, so it'll be mevatel the yayin nesach, and we ignore the heter wine altogether. That's where the permitted wine fell at the end, after the Nesach wine.
Mm-hmm.
Because... Just one second. I just want to make sure that I'm not missing important messages here. Sorry. Oh, he's in. Okay. So, yeah.
Even
so,
if it's more than shishim, it doesn't matter.
So, three. So, Rav Hoshi explains, Rav Yochanan meant to permit the mixture in a case where there was not enough nesach wine to impart flavor in the water, only when the permitted wine fell in the end. In that case, the water nullified the nesach wine, so that when the permitted wine fell in, there was nothing forbidden in the cup with which it could combine. But if the nesach wine fell in last, we cannot discount the presence of the permitted wine into which the Nesach wine falls. The Nesach wine therefore renders the permitted wine prohibited in a minute concentration, because that's what we said. Yain Nesach ases b'koshahu. So therefore the wine would become aser. Once the wine, so now you've got double the wine, right? And once you have double the wine, the water won't be enough to overwhelm it.
There's so much water that it's mizbato, the wine, the good wine that came in first, and when the Nesach HaYayin falls in, it's falling into halachic water, in essence.
Right, exactly.
Is the Heter wine looked at now like Yayin Nesach?
No. If what happens?
The
in which case?
Yayin Nesach falls in last. You said you discount the original wine.
No. Hushanafel ha heter basof. If are you going on Rav Hoshea now? Rav Hoshea is
sure.
No. Okay, let's go over it again. So Rav Yochanan said that you look at the heter as if it's not there. You discount the heter wine. Rav Hoshea now is saying, but that's only if the heter wine fell in libsof. But if the iser fell in libsof, then there's a problem, right?
So what if the Yayin Nesach falls in at the end,
so,
what do we look
so,
at?
So let's go in order. So you have water. Yayin Nesach falls into the water. We look at the water and we say, well, is there enough to be nice and tam? If there's not, it's mutter. Then the Yayin Heter falls in. It's not mitztaref with the old Yayin Nesach because we have a mixture which is Heter here, and therefore it's mutter. In the case where the Heter wine fell in first, and then the Isser fell in, apparently that's a problem. He's saying, If the Nesach fell last, you cannot discount the presence of the permitted wine into which it fell. In other words, it sounds to me like what you're doing is you're not going to say that something is just mutter and say, therefore, the whole mixture is mutter, and for sure it's going to be mevatel the yayin nesach. You could have taken that approach. You could have said, oh, look, if without the hetter wine it was butel, so with the hetter wine you have even more substances here than mevatel it, but we don't say that. We say that the isser wine is going to be mitzdaif with the hetter wine to create a larger dvar isser if it falls in last. That's what it seems to be saying here. Right? Does that answer your question, Zvi?
It seems like it. It turns the hetter wine into isser wine.
That's correct.
Okay.
The nesach wine, therefore, renders the permitted wine prohibited in minute concentration, and that together makes the water forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, he says the bracket is something here a little more complicated. Now, this is exactly the same as Chizkiya, but for a different reason. This is what we just said in the name of Chizkiya. According to Chizkiya, the last wine that falls in the cup to be blended with the water determines the nature. If the Nesach falls in last, the cup is forbidden. Rabbi Yochanan does not determine, according to Rabbi Hoshea, does not determine the nature of the wine water fell last. On the contrary, he's saying, it's the same din though. It has to fall, right? The heter has to fall last. That's correct. But he does not allow us to ignore the permitted wine when it falls into the water first. Thus, when the nesach water later falls in, it combines with the permitted wine. Only if the nesach wine falls in first, can it be nullified. Okay, all he's saying is, it depends what the reason is. Is it because we go back to the last, or is it because it's mitzaref? That's the whole difference. Okay. A little difference. Okay. He disagrees. He says, no difference. Makes no difference. Even if the water and the permitted wine were mixed together first, even if it was blended properly with the permitted wine, you ignore the heter wine, and then you just look at the water. Or you say iser, you look at the nayin yasak, and yesh bonais and tam oser, and lav water, you look at how it affects the water or not, and we ignore the wine altogether.
But so, it's based on nois and tam.
Based on nois and tam.
Not based on the fact that you can't be mevatel nesach yayin in the kosher.
That's correct. Amar b'zeira hadod at amar b'chol inyan. This, that we can discount the presence of the permitted wine applies in all cases. The water never needs to nullify more than the nesach wine. Hey, Chavi, you don't want... I just said it.
Okay.
Amar b'zeira. Hadah da'at amar b'chol inyan. This that you say that we can discount the presence of the permitted wine applies in all cases. Now we're going to explain this. Hey, Chavi, what's the case? Rabbi Yosef Rabbon, Rabbi Avu b'shem Rabbi Yochanan, Shluchas shal yayin nesach shenofel tech chaves shel... second. Sorry. My page was stuck. Yeah, if you have a case like this, you have a flask of nesach wine falling into a barrel of permitted wine, okay? So the entire barrel becomes forbidden, right? I have, again, yayin nesach falling into a barrel of permitted wine. So obviously that yayin nesach is going to forbid the entire barrel. Now the barrel falls into a cistern of water. You view the permitted wine as if it's not even there, even though it had already become the yayin nesach before. But we ignore it. So we just look at the forbidden nesach wine that was in there originally. He's been matcha the whole thing. Okay? So, in 12, he's showing how this is a further leniency. Even though the permitted wine was forbidden first when it was mixed with the nesach wine, and then it later falls into the water, you ignore the original heter wine altogether. Just look at the issa wine, see can the water be mevatel, and if it can, it's mutter. Okay? This is Shver, if you hold Chaticha Nas and Nevela, right? Chaticha Nas and Nevela means that once you have an Issa that imparts time into Heter, and that Heter becomes Usser, then the whole thing is viewed, you're going to need 60 times the whole mixture. Here we don't seem to be saying that for some reason. Okay, now, there's a summary thing here.
It's not the original size of the Nevela, it's...
The original Chaticha. Correct. Now we have a summarized, this 13 is very important. 13 is to summarize. Here we go. This is Nesach wine and permitted wine that fall into water. Here we go. According to Chizkiya, we determine the nature of the wine mixture by what fell in last. The way to remember that is very simple because we tried to say it by Rav Eliezer. If Nesach wine is last, it's Osir. And if the permitted wine is last, it's Mutter. Rav Yochanan does not agree with Chizkiya's view that the nature is determined by what fell last. It's Osir only when there's enough Nesach wine on its own to put Tom into the water. But there are three views how far he'll go with this leniency. Rav Ishia, it's only when the permitted wine fell in last. Number two, Rav Imi, doesn't make a difference. Number three, Rav Zera and Rav Yossi, the son of Rav Bun, even if the Nesach wine and permitted wine had mixed together, and only afterward the water was added, we're mavatal, we ignore the yayin and we say it's bottle. Okay, so that's a summary. That's a wonderful heter. I love that heter. So the Gemara says like this. We return to the Mishnah about Rav Elazar's ruling that a dough that is leavened through the combined efforts of Truma and Chulin, we go after the last dough. This is talking about when they fall in one after the other. 14.
Because then it's the second one that makes it happen.
Right, that's correct. That's the one that's the Makabah Patash, correct. Naflu shneim ka'achas ma'amar Rav Elazar. So what would Rav Elazar say if they both fall at the same time? So, the way he says it's 16, would Rav Elazar's rule in that case, that too, the dough would be forbidden even though it's not enough? It seems to be resolved in the Mishnah itself. It says specifically, it's whether two batches of dough fell in one after the other, implying that if they fell together, he would agree that it would be permitted. This reasoning is flawed. It's possible that Rav Elazar would have forbidden even if it fell together. The Mishnah chose a case where they fell in one after the other to teach us that Rav Elazar permits the dough when the cool and sourdough fell in last. Now, the Gemara has no question what the sages would hold in such a case because they permit the dough even when the truma sourdough fell in last. They obviously hold them as a gemar's mutter, so certainly if it fell together, that would apply. The Gemara is uncertain about Rav Elazar and so on. Okay, so that's the question. What would Rav Elazar hold if it fell in together? The Shemino and Adol, let's learn it from this case. Here's a case. Now here we're talking about the kutum again. So these kusim again, we'll just review it again. The kusim were these people who became gerim because of the lions. And then they weren't sure whether they were true gerim or not true gerim. And then they discovered that there was this Yonah, Demus Yonah on top of a mountain, and they realized that they were still praying to this Demus Yonah, and then they decided they're all goyim, and so they're not geriemus. So there are different kufas. There's a machlokes on whether they were geriemus or geriarias, or they arias with an aleph. Were they gerim because they were truly believed it, or because they just did it because they were afraid of the lions? So that's a machlokes. So what does he say over here? Says that the assumption of this Gemara is that they did not observe the law that prohibits benefiting from chametz retained over Pesach. In other words, they did not keep all the rules. Even if we're holding now, I think that the RM is right. Second. 18 has a hold this thing here. Second paragraph in 18. This Tana holds that the Kufians are Jews, and therefore, if they're Jews, their chametz is shal of a Pesach is aser, like any Jew, right? Now, how long after Pesach do we have to be concerned that this was from on Pesach? That's basically the only question that Tana's dealing with. You don't have to get into all the details now. Okay, so emosai kametzon shel kutim mutalach ha Pesach. How long do we have to wait? So the Gemara says, Shavale Batim, 29B, if it belongs to plain homeowners, Achar Shola Shabbos Shalafia. Let me just tell you the secret over here. The secret over all these answers is the lucky number three. Okay, three. What's three? Because apparently they would have some, let's say, a sourdough from Pesach. So it's Moitzu Pesach. I've got my sourdough that I had stored, that I kept. Now it's Chomesh Olva Pesach Mamish. I go ahead and I use the sourdough. I make my first batch of dough. That first batch of dough also has a koach to make another batch of dough into chametz. So that dough will be osir, and the next dough will also be osir. And there's even a remnant still left to the third dough. So we'll osir three, what we'll call three batches.
Three generations.
Three generations of this dough is going to become osir l'achar Pesach. Each type of person has a different time frame for how long their breads were made, you know, in three stages. That's all we're going to say now. So here it is. If it's a regular Baal Batim, it's 3 weeks because they made it, let's say, private homeowners generally bake once a week. So in order to have three batches, you got to have 3 weeks. That's all it is. Just to read the way he says it, the first week they use a totally forbidden sourdough. The second week there's no longer any sourdough remaining from Pesach. The bread baked that week is leavened from sourdough taken from the dough of the first week. The bread baked the third week is leavened from sourdough taken from the dough of the second week. The effect of the forbidden sourdough is noticeable only for three bakings. That's what he says. Three bakings. Okay. Obviously, if we knew that they baked more often, if I knew that he had baked three times in 1 week, then I'd be mutter after that. You know, this is just...
Like the next group,
Nachtomim. And if it's the chametz of the bakers, the krakim in regular cities, so they have a lot of business. So, l'achar shalosh yomim, in 3 days. Shal Nachtomim b'kfarim, if it's a baker in the outlying villages, then l'achar shalosh tanurim. That's once we knew they baked three times in the ovens. Okay, same idea. Reb Shimon Elazar Aimer, Afkesh Amru Shabbat Batim Achar Shal Shabbat Shalafia. Even when they said it's after 3 weeks, but this Vahu is translated unusually. Vahu usually means that is only when. This translation is completely different. It's very confusing. Vahu, but Shehei Adam Gadol. If he was a person of great means, that means he has many people at his table. Oh, Shoyamasius, but no, he was marrying off his son. Obviously, guess what he's doing? He's baking a lot more than just once a week. Off of Shoshatom and Bisham Zachas, he baked it 3 times in 1 week. Zachazer. Then Mutter. It's Mutter that week. Fine. Right. Even if it's a regular, if it's a baker in a busy city, then it's after 3 days. Who should nidkach? But if he was pressed by many customers, well, for shloshah tumim yamechad, he had to really run his oven off 24/7. You know, like he had to do it all day. So then zachazem mutter. Then as soon as he's done 3 cycles, even in 1 day, it could be mutter. Okay, Tony. That's pretty simple. And even the village bakers, we even have it over here too, on Shloshi Yom Asurim, it's forbidden for 3 days. Meaning, even if we knew... What? No, we're talking about here the bakers in the villages, which we said was 3 times in the ovens, right? So we can't assume 3 days. We need to know how often they baked. That's what we said before. So now what we're saying here, that nonetheless, even if we knew, let's say, that they had done it 3 times within 3 days, we still would not be matrit. Why not? Let's see what it says on the bottom here. 11 and 12. The aforementioned leniency regarding bakers in the cities does not apply to village bakers. They must bake three times on three different days. Okay? If the baker has baked three times in the same day, their bread remains forbidden. 12. As explained above, the reason it's permitted after three bakings is because it's the actual forbidden sourdough is only used on the first baking. Sometimes. Thus, after three bakings, its effect is no longer noticeable. But a village baker, listen to this, he will use one batch of sourdough for all the bakings done in one day. Consequently, the effect of the original forbidden sourdough is noticeable until after 3 days of baking. In other words, what he's doing is, if he were to bake three times in one day, he would divide his sourdough up in three parts. Why is that? The reason the village baker, unlike a city baker, uses one batch of sourdough for all the bakings of the one day is that even a busy baker in the villager does not bake as much as a busy baker. One second. This is in the cities. I'm sorry. The villagers does not bake as much as the city baker, right? Since the village baker knows how many times he will bake in a single day, he prepares sourdough in the morning for all the baking needs of the day. Okay? So what he's saying here is, and the Chazon Ish adds to it, the bakers in the village are different than the bakers in the cities because the houses of the city bakers are very warm from the constant baking. The bakers can therefore rely upon some of the dough fermenting enough during the course of the day to be used even as leaven later. So there's no need for him to divide his sourdough for all the bakings of the day. But in the villages, it's not as hot because it's not as busy, and therefore they will divide up their sourdough. That's basically the bottom line here. Okay? Does that make sense? You good, Svi?
Yeah.
Okay. Next, let's go to page 30. Now, notice, we have not answered the question. Let's not lose track of what we originally asked. What would Rabbi Elazar hold if the two doughs fell in at the same time? We still haven't answered that question. We're going to come to it. Eventually, I hope. The general rule of Brisa is the chametz of the kufiyin is forbidden for the first three bakings. This is because of forbidden sourdough. Okay, now let's see. The world now discuss concerning the rule through which it will resolve the original question. Now, that second dough that did not have actual sourdough in it, lomi isra mehetra himisham, that says, does it not become leavened from a combination? Right? We've got, right, the second, think about this, the second dough that this Kufian baker did. So the first one we know, that's all completely from the Chometz Shaul of a Pesach. But what about the second one? The second one already, you've got some from before Pesach, but some is from the dough itself, because it's from the heter dough. There's part heter, right? So some of the dough was heter, and that also was mixed in. So you've got Zev Zagorim in the second dough. That's what I'm trying to say here. Right? How much from the second baking, which is leavened through sourdough of the first dough, is a product of combination of forbidden and permitted sources. Although the dough of the first baking was produced with forbidden component, it also contained permitted ingredients, the flour and the water. We should therefore apply the principle of Zev Zagorim. That's the question. Why is the Kufiyin Chametz forbidden after the first baking? So the Gemara says, Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah b'shem Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish. How did he answer the question? Mantana chametz and shalkutin Rabbi Eliezer. So he answered because we're going like Rabbi Eliezer. Guess what? Rabbi Eliezer is the one who holds them as a garment is usher. So that works out, right? The combination of truma and chul and sourdough is forbidden. The same way the second dough is forbidden is a combination from the sourdoughs, right? Now in this case, what do we say? This case is a case where what? Are they falling together? The Kufiyin doughs are falling together, right? Because the second sourdough, it's all falling together. That, if we're saying that this is coming out of Rabbi Eliezer, then here we have the answer to our question. Rabbi Eliezer would hold that if they fall together, it would be Osir. Okay. Amar Abyasi L'Rab Hanina Antunoya. He translates this to Rav Hanina of Anassos. It sounds like a Greek name to me. Nihiras. Rabbi Yossi says, I remember that Havesin Morin, that you and Rabbi Yirmiyah, after Rabbi Yirmiyah, you and Rabbi Yirmiyah would rule the Shemir Shlokshim and Lakish, Mantana Hametzah Shalkutim, Rabbi Eliezer. I heard you say that this Brisa is coming out of Rabbi Eliezer. Banan Leinan Amrikin, but we do not say this. Ella, Rabbi Hila Vashemir Shlokish, Yordu Lechametzah Shalkutim, Rabbi Eliezer. The sages conceded to the rule to go stringently in the case of the Kufians, like Rabbi Eliezer. In other words, this brisa with the Kufian dough is not only according to Rabbi Eliezer. It even comes out according to the Chachamim. That's what they wanted to say in response. Six, the sages agree with Rabbi Eliezer that the product of a combination of forbidden chametz and permitted chametz is forbidden. Right? Why is that? That's going to be the question. In other words, if you hold Zevzeh Garm as mutter, why are they agreeing with Rabbi Eliezer in this case of the Kufians? What's the answer? This is so because chametz that was held during Pesach is forbidden even for benefit. Right? It's not an Isra Achila. It's an Isra Hanah. And therefore the sages ruled that Zevzeh Garm will be usher by Isra Hanah. That's what they want to say. It's a chumra, correct. Right.
But not by
Achilo. Not by Achilo, yeah. So in other words, all the Gemara is presented here is a very simple thing. We had a brisa of Chametzah and Shel Kusian, and we said what? That after three times it's Osir, up until three times it's Osir. The reason why the middle one was Osir, we said, is because we first said it was coming out of Rabbi Eliezer. That answered our question that if it's at the same time, it's Osir, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Then the Gemara gave another explanation from Rabbi Yossi that it doesn't have to come out like Rabbi Eliezer, that the Chachamim Yordu, that's the Lashon here, Yordu, the Chachamim kind of like came down to his way of thinking. They agreed with him that when it came to Chametz and Shalkutim, that it's going to be Osir. And the bottom it says the reason is because this is an Isra Hanah. For Eid Min Hadot, this view is further supported from this. The Amr Rab Chanina Breit Rab Abu, Abba Havalei Uvda, my father had a case occur regarding the Chametz of Kufians. So this is the same kind of, this is just another example. This isn't just a Maisa Shahayi, the Gemara is just quoting a Maisa, which is going to bring out what we just said. He had a case where he had this Chametz. Shalach Shalor Rab Chiyol Rab Yasler Rab Imi, so he sent the question. What's the din with this? Iron Lake Rabbi Eliezer made Paskin that it's Osir, like Rabbi Eliezer says, Zevzeh Garm is Osir. Ma'aki Yechodim Meir, are they Paskin like a minority view, like a Yochin? Loi, the Gemara said, no, we should see Yodu Lachamitzah Shalkutim to Rabbi Eliezer. Because even the Chachamim agree by this case. So you see that they Paskin Halach Lamaisa, Le'isra Lachumra, because all the Shitas are going to agree in Chametz and Shalkutim that it's going to be Osir. Amar of Manav of Kumani Rabbi Yasa, Hechma Da'at, the Tamer Taman Halach Rabbi Eliezer, Vekah Halach Rabbi Eliezer. Can I conclude from you saying there, the law is like Rabbi Eliezer, and that the law is accordance with Rabbi Eliezer here in the Mishnah's case of Truma as well? Amalei, L'choldi Bo. For everything we must rule according to Rabbi Eliezer? No, it's only the case of the Chametz that we're going to rule stringently because it's an Isra Hanah. With regard to other prohibitions such as Truma, we will continue to paskin like the Chachamim. All right, so that's the Gemara. Now, Kalim Shesachan B'Shem and Tomei. And here we have it's going to be a little strange in terms of Mitzias here. But here we're talking about, according to, there's a Machlokes exactly how to learn the case here. The Rambam has his own way, Mahalach, in this Mishnah, which we're not going to be going to court. We're not going to be learning it like the Rambam, according to, through as we learn the Gemara, because that's not the common way of learning it. But so I'll tell you what the Rambam says right away first. The Rambam says the kalim we're talking about are kalim which are made out of stone. And those kalim are not royal kabotoma. Stone kalim are not kabotoma. So I take some oil, I smear some oil which is tummy on the stone. Then I take some oil which is wait for it to dry off or something. Then I put some more oil, which is tar, on the stone.
So the issue is going to be, does the old oil impact the new oil and make it tummy or not? That's the Rambam's Mahalach. I don't want to go into it too much, because that's not the way we're going to learn. The way we're learning, the kalim here are specifically leather. And kalim doesn't mean necessarily, you know.
So the oil gets totally absorbed
into the leather.
A baseball glove.
Perfect example. Right? And so I have tomate oil gets absorbed into the baseball glove. At that point, the baseball glove becomes tomate. Okay? The oil is on top of the baseball glove. Then I go ahead and I put the baseball glove in the mikvah. Now the baseball glove becomes tahar. Now I go ahead and I put oil, which is tahar, again on the baseball glove. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about here. Let's work it out. Kalim shesachem v'shem and tamei, I have vessels which are first lubricated with tamei oil. The chalas of v'sachem v'shem and tar, and then you lubricated them again with tahar oil. O shesachem v'shem and tar, you first lubricated it with tahar oil. The chalas of v'sachem v'shem and tamei, then you lubricated it again with tamei oil. In either case, oil began to seep out of the vessel. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, acharishon anibah.
There's no mention
here about going to the mikvah. Oh, hold on. You know, I gave you a jump start on this. We haven't said it yet. We're going to have to look at the footnotes if you want to see what I told you. If you take a look at number 14, okay, the bottom of 30A2, footnote 14. In this case, a person lubricated a leather vessel with oil that was tumay. The tumay oil transmitted tuma to the vessel, which remained tumay even after it dried. The vessel was then immersed in a mikvah to make it tar. What? Then it was then lubricated again, this time with tar oil. Okay, so you've got three things that are happening here. You've got lubrication with tumay oil. You have it drying out, right? And you have it going to the mikvah. Now you're going ahead and you're going to put tar oil on it. The question the Mishnah will consider is whether the vessel that remains tar even after the oil begins to seep out of the vessel. Do we say that the oil that's seeping out is the first tamay oil, or is it the last tahar oil? What's seeping out of this leather?
But it's not a combination of the two.
Even if it was a combination, tamay oil will be with tamay the tahar oil.
Didn't it go to the mikvah?
Oh, Frank Mordechai, great kasha. Why, when you went to the mikvah, wasn't it matahar the oil? The answer is, in the footnotes, it answers your question.
Right.
It says,
right.
No, it says that the rule is, mikvah is only matahar water in the fluid area. It only is matahar water. It's not matahar oil. Very interesting. It says over here. Let's look at it here. Let's read the whole foot.
It didn't accomplish anything.
It accomplished that it was matahar the glove, the baseball glove. Now, as long as the tamay oil is inside of the baseball glove, it cannot be matamay the baseball glove, because at that point it's what's called tuma balua. It's swallowed. It's absorbed. So if it's absorbed, it can't be matamay anything. It's only once it comes out that perhaps it could be chayzer matami something, but that's not really the issue.
Putting the new oil on might cause the old oil to come out.
That's correct. That's the issue here. Look at the second paragraph in 14. This question is applicable only when the vessel was dried and immersed in the mikvah prior to being lubricated with our oil. Otherwise, there'd be no question that the vessel is tamei. For if the vessel were still moist at the time of the subsequent application of tahar oil, the tamay oil would convey tumah to the tahar oil, and any subsequent seepage of oil that takes place after the vessel dried and is immersed in a mikvah would render the vessel tamay, since all the oil absorbed in the vessel is tamay. See what his point is? His point is like this. If I put in tamay oil and didn't wait for it to dry out, and I put in tahar oil, as soon as the tahar oil touches the tamay oil, it becomes tamay. Now all the oil that's absorbed in the baseball glove is now tamei. So subsequently, whatever comes out, if something does come out, is obviously going to be with Tame. Here we're talking about it dried out first, then I put on the tar oil. Okay? Since a mikveh cannot purify any liquid other than water, the tame oil remains tame and continues to convey tuma to the vessel and any subsequent oil applied to it. Okay? Okay, so it was both dried, bottom line of the paragraph. The only case where we're talking about the vessel was both dried and immersed in a mikvah prior to being lubricated with the tar oil. That's our case. So, you're right, Shopsy. It doesn't say it. It had to be derived from the footnotes. Okay. So now, let's see what Rabbi Lazar says. Rabbi Lazar is going to say a little different. See, what I was expecting from Rabbi Lazar, based on our previous Mishnah, Rabbi Lazar said, Achar Achron Aniba, right? So he goes after the last to determine what's the main thing. Here he surprisingly turns around and says, Achar Rishon Aniba. Here he says, I go after the first one, right? Now,
are we trying to ask what is actually coming out of the glove?
Yeah, we're going to talk about this in more detail as we go on. Yes, but let me just first tell you what the translation here is very interesting. He ignores the words Aharishan Aniva. This is unbelievable. This is so typical. Ignore what it says and say what you want it to say, because of the reason I just told you. Rav Lezer just said he goes after the last one. Why would he go after the first one? So what does he do in the translation? I follow not only the last oil, he adds here, but also the first oil. Therefore, in both cases, the vessel is tummy. This is a very difficult way to translate it. This I can't accept it. And in fact, I found he's going to bring in textual variances to others who don't learn this way, and I prefer the alternative. Anyway, let's keep going. Hachamim Maimrim, Lanoma Beis, Lanoma Beis, the Hachamim say, Acharon. We only follow the last oil to follow the nature of the seeping oil. Therefore, in the first case, the Mishnah, what was the first case of the Mishnah? You first put in what? Tamei oil? And then you put in tar oil second. So therefore, that'll be tar. The second case, which was tar oil first and tumi oil second, that will be tumi. That's the way the chacham is going to go. Okay. The gra came to my help here in making the pshat and the mission a little clearer. The gra says. Let me see. Where, is this the right place for me to read it? You know what? Let me wait till 3. Okay, well, you're going to see in a second. My time with the Rabbi Lazar, Harishan Moitzi and Sa'achron. This is addressing your question to me. It's that the first oil expels the last oil. And as it does so, some of it seeps out as well. Okay, so what does that mean? So let's think about this a second. The first oil is what causes the second oil to seep out. So, in other words, let's make you believe you are tummy oil and you're sitting inside the glove and you're absorbed.
Yeah,
The physics of it. You all of a sudden, you're kind of like in a dry state. Then I go ahead and I encounter moisture, which is exactly my min, I'm like oil, and I
break it down
and it becomes, instead of dry tang, you know, I think of it like dry tang, I now become oil tang, you know, and I join with my tahar oil friend and start to seep out as I expand out of my dried state. Because that's the nature of anything dry. When something dry is, it starts to absorb and it starts to push out and expand. Anyway, so therefore, the way he's learning now, the way the Tapa is learning, So it's both. They're both coming out. Not only the last one comes out, but the first one comes out. So they both come out. So that's why he translated it the way he did. Aharishon, and he bought. Not only do I go after the last one, I also go after the first one. What it makes no difference. It's going to be Tomei in every case. The Gra changes it. The Gra changes it. Look in the box in the bottom. Let's see. Emerges from the elucidation and explanation of Rav Elazar that Rav Elazar maintains that both oils seep out. So it makes no difference. This is difficult because the Tosefta in Truma says that you should not lubricate a vessel with Tamei oil and then tar, because when the oil begins to seep out, it will be only the first Tamei oil that will be expelled. In other words, the language of the Tosefta is it will be only. So when Rav Elazar, so therefore the
only one will be expelled, but the other one is superficial. Mixed
too. Yeah, whatever. That's a question. But anyway, so the words it will only.
If you take blue oil.
Okay, you're at, you want to do an experiment.
Blue oil,
do an experiment.
What's going to come out, blue or purple?
Good question.
Purple, because they're both.
Who's that?
In this case, we don't do zevzeh.
No. Here we're talking about tumah. Zevazah is not a din by tumah. So
why?
Hold on. Let's first finish this box here. So since it says it will only be, so it sounds like, so. Therefore, he changes the words. It's when he said achar harishon anibah, he really meant the first one. Not the second, last one. The last one is not the one. According to this explanation, it's stating that according to Rav Elazar, the first oil prevents the last oil from seeping out. Only the first oil seeps out. Therefore, the first application was a tamei, the vessel become tamei. And following this approach, the Gra amends the Gemara to say, not what we have in our Gemara, harishon moitzias ha'acharon. He changes the girsa to ha'acharon, Motzi es harishon. He changes it around. He changes the gear. Say, look in the side. I go as a gra. See? Ois beis. Hoki garsinon. Ha'acharon motzi es harishon. The last oil is going to be motzi, the first oil. And therefore, if the first oil is tamei, then it becomes tamei. If it's tar, it'll be, right? So that works out much better in the language of the Mishnah. Rav Elazar is saying, achar harishon anibo. Right? Only that. So that's a machlekes. Dov, do you want to ask something? Dov? Dov?
No, I'm good.
You're good? I'm Rabbi Yekin. I'm Yehuda Rabbi Lazar Shneim. I'm a Dover Echad. Okay. They said the same thing. This is the Taman. Here we're going to have a classic Yerushalmi Tushtel. The Yerushalmi, for some reason, I'm finding this often, that it will quote comparisons to Mishnayos in Para. I know this is not the first time we've had Mishnayos from Para. They seem to have this, I don't know what it is, this is like a fixation with Masechta Para to try to make comparisons. It's very interesting. I haven't done a study of it, but I think this is not the first time we've done something like this. This Nidan Tamon, Tzluchas Shapi Hatzar. Let's suppose you have a flask whose mouth is narrow. Now we're talking about paraduma, obviously. Now when they used to water of the paraduma to matire someone, it says that they would dip the azov in the water, tavalasa azov b'mayim, and then you would sprinkle it on the person. Now the thing to remember here, there's a psul that's possible here, and that is, If let's suppose that azov was getting water not from a result of a dipping, but because it drags some water off the surface of the flask in which it's found, that's not called tabal. That's called cleaning up. You know, like you're taking a paper towel and dragging it across the surface of a wet table. You're taking a arava, right? An arag, like take your arava leaf and dragging it across. That's the case we're talking about. So he has a flask with a narrow mouth in which purifying katas water is contained. Toivel umala kadako. You can dip the azo stem into the flask and raise it in the usual manner and sprinkle it upon a tummy person. Rabbi Yehuda Omer hazoya harishoina. That's only good for the first sprinkling, but you can't re-dip it a second time because the original katas water together with some of the oil of the azov will seep out and mix with the new katas water, invalidating the sprinkling. In other words, the azov has natural oils that are present in the leaf, and you put it back in. Let's see.
You need a separate container?
No, you need a separate azov.
Or if you had enough water on it, just sprinkle it three times and don't. I don't know if you have to be tovel it three times. Let's see what it says over here, numbers 6 and 7. After the azov has been dipped into the katas water, there's risk that as it's pulled through the narrow opening, some of the oil will be squeezed out and mixed with the katas water. Okay. In spite of the risk, the Tana holds that one purifying the tummy person need not be concerned. He may dip the azov into the flask, removes it from the flask, sprinkle it in the usual manner. The reason an invalid liquid disqualifies the katas water with which it mixes is that the amount of katas water is diminished through the oil, so there's no longer the minimum measure of katas water necessary for sprinkling. Okay. Blah, blah, blah.
If you go back in the second time, the ratio changes.
Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda agrees, number 7. One may use an azov dipped into the flask with a narrow outpouring, need not be concerned, blah, blah, blah. He argues, however, this is only once. At that point, the azov is not yet saturated with water. There's no concern it will seep out. The second dipping and sprinkling, however, cannot be executed, for then there's a concern as the chatas water from the second dipping attempts to penetrate the now saturated and softened azov. The first water together with some azov oil will seep out, and that will make a problem. Okay, that's what it says. So the Gemara makes the following statement. Now, tomorrow, just like Rabbi Yehuda Amar Harishon Moitzias HaAchron, that the first water absorbed along with its oil expel the last water and seeps out along with it. Right, that's what we're saying. That the water that was absorbed by the azov will subsequently cause oil of the azov to come out with it. This is what Rav said in Amisha too. Harishon Maisi Esha Acharon. That the first oil is that was used to lubricate the vessel will expel the last oil and seep out. So Rav Yehuda and Rav Eliezer are the same. That's the comparison. So the Gemara says, "Akadam shesach mikan umasim tzarasheni." We're talking about when you lubricate here on one side of the vessel and you find oil on the second side. In that case, we can assume the original oil seeped out as it expelled the new oil. Sach mikan umasim mikan. What if you lubricated on one side of the vessel and later found oil on the same side? Ma'amar v'lazer. What would v'lazer say in that case? So let's see over here. What are we talking about here? Let's see, 9. Since the vessel is so saturated that oil seeps all the way through to the other side, you can assume the last oil did not seep out on its own, but was expelled by the first oil, which is absorbed through the entire vessel. As we have learned, some of the first oil seeps out as it expels the second oil. Hence, both oils play a role in determining the status of the vessel. I don't know what he's talking about. What oils? Oh, no, we're going back, I'm getting mixed up here. Sorry about that. We're going back to the case of smearing the kalim with the oil, right? So let's forget the baseball, let's not make it a baseball glove because it's too thick. Let's just make it a flask. So the inside, you've got one, wall of oil, of leather. So you could smear some oil on one side of the leather. Now it could come out on the inside, it could come out on the outside. So which side is it coming out on, right? Am I right about this?
It's coming out on the opposite side that you smeared.
Yeah, so Rabbi Elazar, right?
Physically pushing it through?
Rabbi Elazar is willing, when you lubricate here on one side and finds oil on the second side, you can assume that the original oil seeped out as it expelled the new oil. Because that's the side which is furthest away from the new oil.
And
the inside is farther away.
Closest to the old oil.
Soch mikan and wasa mikan, but if you lubricated on one side and you found oil on the same side, what would Rabbi Elazar say then? Let's say the inside is probably that's the question. Nishmina min hadar. Let's try to figure it out from this ruling. According to Rabbi Yehuda, going back to the Azov stock, right? Not only is it true where you're dipping the tzlukas into a narrow flask, ela afil neor lamin aleph, ela afilu seifel, even if it's a wide basin of hatas water, in that case also he holds it will seep out. Okay, so even though he was talking about a flask, doesn't matter. Number one, second line. The same is true regarding a bowl. In that case, too, he's concerned. If you dip it twice, the azov oil will seep out as it expels the new water that it is entering. So the Mishnah stated a case of flask to teach the Chachamim al Matarit, even that case. Okay, so therefore, what? Vomer B'yekanon, and we said, this we said already, they're both saying the same thing, meaning they equate to each other. So now let's resolve the inquiry about the oil coming out. Islach meimar tamon b'shesoch mikan umotz b'tzad hasheni. Can you say there in the case of the Azov that it's the equivalent of lubricating a leather vessel from here on this side and finding it on the second side? Of course not. B'shesoch mikan umotz mikan. That's where one lubricated the vessel on one side and found the oil on the same side. So that's where it's both on the same side. In other words, why are we assuming it's on the same side by the Azov, right? Huh?
There's no really one side or the other side on the Azov. It's all one thing, isn't it?
Let's see number three. Since the wide basin does not exert any pressure on the Azov stalk, the stalk does not become softened enough to become completely saturated. Hence, it cannot be compared to a case in which a vessel lubricated with oil is completely saturated.
Because it's wide and flat rather than tall, then the distance the Azov goes in is a whole different physics. It's this way rather
flat. Is the equivalent of a vessel that is not completely saturated, the case where the oil seeped out of the vessel on the same side. Thus, it is evident that Rabbi Yehuda's concern that the first liquid absorbed in the solid material will expel the second liquid and seep out with it, even when that solid material is not completely saturated. Okay, so basically what we're saying here is that however you understand the physics of it, but if the case of the Gemara introduced here is case of a seifel, that even though it's not a narrow vessel, that he still said his same halacha, which is what? That namely, you can only dip this in one time. If you're going to dip it in a second time, it's not going to be good. Now, what? There is no pressure. If it's a seifel, there's nothing pressing against this azov stalk or leaf, whatever it is. I don't know what it is. Hyssop, whatever it is. It's a leaf. I'm not sure what's exactly sure. But
it's on a stem.
It's on a stem, and we're not afraid that there's any pressure. So if there's no pressure, so it could not have become fully saturated with water. And so therefore, if he's worried about something coming out, he's worried about it coming out on the same side of the leaf. So from that, the Gemara is deriving, therefore, Rabbi Eliezer is the same thing. Since he's saying the same halacha, like Rabbi Yochanan said, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehuda both said the same thing. Therefore, the saturation of the oil is not going to be... It's going to be a superficial saturation, and therefore the second application, it will come out on the same side, and therefore it will be tummy in that case also. Ad kan. I want to say, goodbye to everybody. Everybody have a good night, everybody.
When are you coming back?
Tov.
Mañana.
Tomorrow.
Good.
Hold tov.
All right.
Good night.
Unlock the door, please. Keep my Kamara here.